Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, world? It's Badass Southern like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cup. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
Yeah, this is Cassidy the Hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, man. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy, Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff,
baby. Dollars, the queen of trap representing Crenshaw. And you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible. Giving a shout out to the live show on Friday night, Off the Cuff Radio. And I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it is, what it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. And Off the Cuff Radio is always where it's at on Friday nights. West West, y'all.
As Jay Prince would say, oh man, here we go again. What it do, man? This your man, King Eric, the Media Assassin. Tune in to Off the Cuff Radio, episode number 478, damn it. You heard it again, 478. We on that trail to 500, man. I got my host T-Max with the facts in the building.
What to do. Another fantastic night of OTC up in the building. It is King Eric and myself, 2-4 of the Fantastic Four. Shout out to our co-host, Mr. Elon Sandman, Lady Chinchilla. And we are live and direct to do it again, giving you the very best in hip-hop conversation and culture journalism. What it do, y'all?
Yes, indeed, man. And, you know, this is going to be a special hour episode right here. This guy here, man, from my back of the woods, he's returning with a tour going on. He's steady on the road putting it down, representing North Carolina. And he's back with us. He was with us in January, so he's back in March to let us know what he got going on. This guy's on he's on his purpose, putting it down from block, from town to town. What's welcome? I am the fat boy in the building, man. What's good, brother?
Welcome
yo,
back.
Yo,
man.
I'm just glad to be back, man. What's up?
We're happy to have you back, man. How you been? What's going on with you?
I'm doing good, man. Just, you know. Still chasing the dream, just trying to make things shake, you know. Just glad to be back with y'all. I'm actually getting ready for. I'm headed to New York. He was talking about the shows and everything. I'm heading to New York tomorrow. I'm gonna be performing. This will be my first time performing in New York. I'm gonna be in Manhattan. Can't remember the location right off the top of my head, but. Check my page, it's on there.
Yeah, so
what's
man,
it feel like, man?
We want to talk to us about this tour, what you got going on, man. Is it like a virtual tour?
No, so it's actually a little bit, it's a little bit of both. Actually, New York, I'm going to be, shout out to Vero G. I've been there working with her for a little while. But she has an artist showcase that she does up there that I'm going to be going and being a part of and performing. So that's actually going to be, like, in person. I know, so Jam Online Concert, that'll be the concert that I'm putting on. And that'll really be the only one that's really virtual because then I'm going to be in Greensboro in April and then I'm going to be in Orlando in June. So, yeah, I'm trying to move around a little bit.
That's nothing about it. You know, when you got the music and the movement, it's all about travels in terms of spreading the love, you know, when proceeding to, you know, bless, you know, the fans with your talent. This is your first time going to New York, or you've been there before?
So this will be my first time in New York. Like, I do try to travel. I'm real stuck on Florida, though. But this has to be my first time in New York, like, ever, you know what I mean? But then on top of that, to actually be performing, I'm definitely excited.
Yeah, man, you about to hit through the five boroughs?
No, I'm gonna just be in Manhattan tomorrow night. It's a one night only thing, and yeah, I'm gonna knock that down. It was originally in Bronx, but they wound up having to switch the location, so now it's gonna be in Manhattan.
Okay, yeah, man. And one thing about it, I mean, you represent hip hop to the fullest stat. So you're going to the Mecca, New York City. You know, even though it originated in the Bronx originally, 1520 Sedgwick Boulevard, stand up, August 14th, I believe, 1976
mm-hmm.
was the date. I believe that it was.
Yep.
That's where it was officially. That's when it was officially recognized as the beginning.
Herc and Neil.
So
yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, in terms of where what was pretty much going on at the time, a little bit of trivia for our listeners out there, and we're not going to turn it into a debate about it in terms of the origins. Kool Herc was considered to be with the pioneer of the two turntables, although I've talked to people from there, born and raised in Boston, New York, who said prior to that was already going on a little bit before, but he was the one that kind of popularized it. You know, but either way, he still was the one that helped bring us to the forefront. And, you know, and of course, it set the template from the party culture, what was going on with the block parties, to really
mm-hmm.
what would come later on with the music. So, I mean, fast, this is beautiful. This is like a homecoming for anything. You know, you're going back to the place of New York City where it all started.
Right.
What does it mean to you? Yeah, what does it mean to perform there, to really, really be... And by the way, I've been in New York before. You'll love it there. Shopping is unbelievable. Just the sights, man. Just try not to look up too much at all the buildings. They're going to know you're a tourist.
Got you. Well, for me, it's groundbreaking. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, like I said, I like to travel and everything. But and I'm not necessarily like, oh, I'm going to go to New York and I'm going to make the big time. But it's just the fact of, you know, that even my talent, you know, writing and picking beats and recording and all that stuff, that somebody else has even recognized that and like, yeah, you worth putting on a show, you know, in one of the biggest cities in the world. Like, regardless of what happened after that already, to me, is like, you know, that's dope. You know what I mean? There's a lot of cats that don't leave a city block with the rhymes. Not knocking anybody. I'm just saying, like, it feels nice. To even have the opportunity to do this, and I'm definitely grateful for the chance. And then I can already feel the energy. You know what I mean? I can already feel the energy. I know, like you said, it's the Mecca of hip-hop. It's the original, you know. So, again, I'm not expecting to go out there and meet Jay-Z and P. Diddy and Blow. You know what I mean? But it's just like the energy, the that's where it came from, but then that's also where it thrives. That's where it lives. That's where it breathes and grows. And like a lot of even progression in hip hop now comes out of New York City. So it's like, it's huge for me, especially, you know, coming out of a small town in North Carolina. You know what I mean? It definitely means something.
Well,
as we've been going further with the show, man, we've been, you know, getting new audiences and more people checking us out since you've been on, man. So, you know, to give people a brief manuscript of what you all about, man, tell people, for those who just tuning in and getting to know who you are, tell us a little bit about yourself and your inspiration into this rap thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm Fat, formerly known as the Fat Boy. I'm switching it up. So you can call me Fat for short. I always prefer that for short anyway. It's just easier. And, yes, it's okay. I'm not going to be offended if you call me. but I'm from North Carolina, born and raised, Greensboro, North Carolina. I actually have been rhyming for a long time. Like, I did a lot of rhyming just, you know, as expression before I ever was like, yo, I want to try to actually do something with it and get it out to the people. So mm-hmm. that's pretty much my MO. I'm also an illustrator. I do graphic design. I do, you know, illustrations and things like that. I actually would like to do, like, a comic book or a cartoon or something like that, but I'm still learning a lot of ins and outs with that kind of thing. I'm a rapper by trade, but I'm a creative at heart. And my message to everybody, I tell everybody pretty much the same thing. Keep doing you. Somebody gonna feel it. In this world we live in, it's real easy to kind of conform to, like, oh, I got to look like this, and I got to drive like that, and I got to sound like, look, smell like, work like, you know what I mean? But I feel like sometimes the path of most resistance might be a little bit better. Like, just be who you are. It might not be acceptable to everybody on the planet, but the people that feel what you got going on is going to be the people that's supposed to feel what you got going on. So just kind of stay true to yourself as best as you can in this cookie cutter manufactured social media world we living in.
Yeah. And one thing you said, that is the epitome of what hip hop culture is, because it was an outlet for the expression of the marginalized in American society, the black and brown people of the inner city who didn't always have that voice or the means to express what they were going on. So this is something for you, Fat, where, you know, you are that example of excellence in a continuously changing and shifting, morphing culture that celebrates, you know, the genius of the block and those that are orators, griots, you know, those ambassadors, those people who would give the news to what is going on out there. When you talk earlier about FAST, we want to, you know, go on this for a minute, because what you said, King and myself, we, you know, me and my brother, we talked about this so much on air and off air about getting out of the city. And it's ironic because when you look at New York, it was a beautiful confluence of what hip-hop culture was, and it just happened to be born in the mecca of the entertainment capital of the world, especially in the United States. So not only was the culture birthed there, it was right smack in the place where it could really, really, really gain traction, and it did. And it's definitely a place where, like they say, shout out to Jay-Z, Alicia Keys, you know, Fred Astaire, you know, of course, Frank Sinatra, because who's from New Jersey, who said, I did it my way. You know, that's one of the places, like they say, you know, all the legends come through, from Radio City Music Hall to Madison Square Garden to the Harlem, you know, in the Apollo Theater. Like they said, you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. And, you know, so many artists are content to kind of be in their hometown and they feel that they make it there. How important is it for artists to get outside of that area where they're at, no matter where they're from, you know, to really, really branch out and really, really spread, you know, what they have to share with everybody else?
I think it's hugely important, but for me personally, so the main reason for me wanting to get out more and do more traveling and spread the music to other places and that kind of thing was just I want to see more. You know what I'm like? I want to see more. I want to make memories later on when I'm not rapping later or whatever the case may be. I want to be able to look back and be like, yo, I saw Times Square with my own two eyes, you know. I performed on stage in Fort Lauderdale, you know, just little stuff like that, just to make memories, have experiences. I feel like I'm one of those people that feel like the best life is definitely more one where you're experiencing life. You know, you're not just stuck in a cubicle or you're not just stuck on the block. Like, you can see different things. There's a lot of stuff out there in the world to see. And so that's kind of the base of it. That's kind of the base of it for me, but then a lot with that, the music kind of goes before I do. My music has been played in New York, somewhere in New York at some point, long before, you know, tomorrow when I'm actually going to be there. My music has been played overseas in London. I've never been there before. My music, you know what I mean? So it's like a combination of the two. It's like the music is going to go, especially in the internet age. Somebody in Japan can hear your song at the same time somebody in New Jersey can hear your song, you know what I mean? So, but at the same time, to be able to, you know, let's say somebody in New Jersey, like with New York, you know what I mean? I've actually, the young lady that put me on the show and everything, I've actually been talking to her and networking with her for a while. And she liked the music, and I've done some graphic design for her. So, you know, it was a lot before this to where it was like, now it's kind of like she seen my talent. She feel like, you know, I'm not only good enough to work with and to work with her on her stuff, but to also put me on a stage somewhere like New York, you know, big stage, small stage. I ain't tripping about neither one of them. It's a shot, you know what I mean, to be seen elsewhere. And I feel like for artists, it's a huge importance to be seen. Even if you popping in your hometown, that's even more reason for you to take it somewhere else and let somebody else get popping with you, you know what I mean? So it's hugely important to go out, A, to have them experiences, but B, to also just expand and let other people feel you.
And plus, yeah, we got to also build about the importance behind having the right team behind you, because without a solid team behind you, it's just like a deer in the headlights, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And something that I had to realize about a team, like, you know, a lot of people hear team and they kind of feel like that's the people that's on your payroll and that's da-da-da-da. But a lot of the times the people, the team, especially starting off, is the people that just really believe in you and are willing to work with you and you know, right. So, like, shout out to the chef. He's actually, we're working on the joint album. And when I say, like, he been doing the bulk of the, you know, he make the beef and then he also doing the mixing and the mastering and, you know, like, we playing to our strengths because I'm doing, like, some of the graphic designs and I'm doing the lyrics and I help with the arranging and then, you know, I put in my input on videos, stuff like that. So, you know, we playing to our strengths, but that counts to me as a team, even though he ain't only working with me and I payroll and all, you know, but I know if I'm like, yo, I need a beat for this track, da-da-da-da, he can whip something up and then I can go and record it. So, you got to, like you said, you got to have a good team and you got to let your team play to their strengths. You know, you don't want the right wide receiver at center because then you getting sacked. You know what I mean?
Great analogy. Great analogy. And the one thing about it people have to understand with a team is that everybody has to understand, it's like the 95-96 Bulls. Who I will go on this show, hold my nuts and say it, they're the greatest NBA team ever, you know, because when you, not only from the 72-10 record, which was great, but it's also when you look at that team on the bottom, Michael Jordan, Scottie, Dennis Rodman, Steve Kerr, Jeb Butler, Bill Winnington, Ron Harper, so many of those, Randy Brown. Well, I take that back. I think Randy Brown came the next year. But when you look at that team, everybody knew what they were supposed to do. Bill had everybody in their position going to their strength of what he knew they could do best. And they knew who the star player was, but the star player also knew that as great as he could be, Mike knew as great as he was, Mike wasn't always sometimes that guy taking the last shot in game. You know,
yeah.
Michael knew when to defer and let other people do what they needed to do to help the team win. And, you know, King of that, so many times, from all of us being children of the culture, journalists in it, performing, you know, being actively involved and engaged, we see situations this day and past days where a lot of people, we've seen crews fall apart because somebody thought they were bigger, whether internally, some behind the scenes, or the main performers thought that they were bigger than the whole team, and it eventually fell apart.
And that's what I try to do, you know, like when I'm working with people, I just try to let people, I know people ask me, like, how do you come up with some of your videos and da-da-da-da-da, and this is a great example. I'll come up with, like, the overarching vision. I know what I want the video to be about. I know some of the stuff that I want to see in the video, but when I go to the videographer, I know that that's what they do. I know that they know how to work the camera. They got the technique. They have the eye to bring the vision to life, so I'm not going to, I try not to do too much micromanaging and be like, well, look, why don't you da-da-da, blah-da-blah. I'm just like, okay, in this scene, I want the girl to do this and then the guy to do that. That's really what I want to see. And then I leave it up to them to, okay, you know, what's she going to be wearing maybe or which angle are we, what's the lighting going to look like, that kind of thing. I kind of let people play your position. I'm not a videographer and you're not a rapper, so let's play our positions and get it right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's important because also, too, people have to understand from the team aspect of it being a business hat, King, it's also something where
team is one thing, but it's also like a job. You have to pick the people who are the most qualified. And a lot of times we see the situations fall because everybody's trying to put on their people in positions of where maybe they're not. One thing about it, when we look at the business, especially something where there's no pension plan, you know, there is no 401k, it's all about your talent, your drive, your determination, and the people to share that vision with you, is that you have to have people in your circle who know what they're doing when they're doing it, which means you have to get somebody in there, if they're a manager, check their record as a manager. And this is game we give to all of our listeners out there. Get, if you're going to have a manager, get somebody who has had experience managing, who has an idea of what is supposed to transpire. Get a lawyer who understands how to read contracts. You know, if you're going to have security, get some people that understand in terms of security what protocol procedure is. And more than anything, the temperament. A qualified security expert is supposed to see the situation and diffuse the situation before the situation goes high. You know, a lot of times you see some of these fights break out with, you know, people with entourages who are supposed to be security because it's like they don't have the temperament. They don't know how to diffuse it or move people away before stuff happens. These are just little things. You have to have everybody who's qualified for it. You know, because this is one thing, and we've seen it a lot of times, tragically all too often, when there is a miscommunication or a mistake made, we've seen artists get hurt or killed behind it because business was not handled from a certain perspective.
Right.
Yeah, so this is, it's not to be preachy, but it's about what we love about the hip-hop culture. We want everybody who is going to endeavor in it to have an understanding of what this means. And because it is still rooted in the street, because it is rooted from a street culture, that's where hip-hop came from, there are intrinsic street elements to it, which after a while, for all the team and everything, what is the overarching narrative? It is a business, and you want to conduct your business properly, safely, soundly, respectfully, responsibly, and not necessarily in that order.
Facts.
Yeah.
So true.
Hey, do you have any new videos that you have in the works?
I do. So the last one was One Night in Baton Rouge. So I got my song Cuban that's dropping on the 31st. And that'll be the audio that's coming out on the 31st. And then not long after that, we're going to be dropping the video. The video is shot. We just edited in, you know, doing notes and all that stuff, trying to work it out. But that's going to be the prequel to One Night in Baton Rouge, actually, because so One Night in Baton Rouge was just supposed to be like a one-off kind of short film visual. You know, I thought it would just be cool to do a mafia movie. But people start asking, like, yo, what happened? Like, why you just pop up and knock dude off for no reason? Like, what happened? So I'm like, okay, so let's kind of tell the story of what happened before that. But then we also thinking about rolling it into a trilogy and doing what happened after that too, but that's just kind of an idea we're playing with right now. But Cuban will be coming out. That will be, like I said, we got that shot, so that's in the can. We're just working on the editing on that one. The song will be out on the 31st, and then the video will be out not long after that. I ain't got a date yet, but we're working on it.
Let's go. When you get into conceptualizing your visions about your songs, what's the creative process for you in terms of when you really sit down and want to figure out, you know, what you want to do?
So I'm going to try to go from, like, concept to video at least, because then after the video, that's when it kind of really get complicated trying to get it out to people and actually get them to see it. So we're going to go, you know, just for the creative side. So before I even write the song, it starts with a mood. There's times where I'll sit down and I'll get some beats. I usually do start with the beat first, so I'll listen to the beat and I'll catch a vibe. But sometimes, like again, it starts with the mood. So it's like if I turn on a beat and it's kind of more like a party beat and I'm not really in like a party mood, I'll probably skip that beat. We'll go to the next track. catch a vibe from the beat. Let's say it's something I want to talk about, you know, a breakup or something like that. That's what the mood I'm in. So I get the beat, it's vibing, I'll write to it. Generally, I come up with the verses first and then attach a hook later on. Once that, a lot of the times I won't have a title. I want to say maybe like 60-70% of the time I won't have a title until after the song is written, and then I'll take something from the song and that'll be the title. Every once in a while I'll have just an off-the-wall title that doesn't really, like The Love Affair of Don Julio, that didn't really have anything in the song of that, but I felt like it was a title that'll stick out, that's memorable, you know. So that's, you know, then I'll record it. I usually try to, it don't take me long to record, because generally I have gone over it so many times prior to going to the studio that I kind of know, except maybe ad-libs, I kind of know how I want everything to sound. So once you got the song, really once you got it, once I have a rough draft of the song is when I decide if it's really video worthy or not. Because once I had a rough draft, if I take it and I listen to it over and over and over, like there's some songs where I can put it on repeat and I'll listen to it over and over and, of course, analyze it, but also just enjoy it. Those are generally the ones that I'm like, yo, I might want to do a video to this one. Because there's other songs where I get the rough draft and I listen to it and I'll be like, this ain't it. We got to go back to the drawing board on that one. So once I'm like, yo, I think I want to do a video to that one, then it's pretty much concept. Because like I said, I let the videographer do a lot of their job. So I'm like, you know, I want to do this. I want to have a music video where we at a party, just for example. So then it's just coming up with the party. You know what I mean? How are we going to make that happen? And I talk to the videographer, and they'll, you know, see if they can make something happen. I'll see if I can make something happen. And it's kind of just teamwork after that. And then once you get the video, it's after that, you know, like I said, it's just getting people to watch it, getting people to check it out and share it. And that's a huge part. So that's like a brief overview from concept to video.
But I think what you did too, Fat, was you broke it down from an independent level, what is the same thing that goes on in a record label in terms of,
oh, yeah,
you know, how they, you know, look at songs in terms of, you know, except the difference is, you know, you being an independent artist, your vision is your own. You know, you are your own enterprise. You have to say, along with your team, of what is good and what is not going to fly. So that's the situation where, you know, as opposed to being at a label, you know, you're sitting down with record executives, you know, and I'll tell anybody, it is not no fun at all when you're actually sitting in a board meeting, which can be board meeting, look at the play on words, and everybody's like trying to figure out which direction it's going to go, you know, because you're having these people basically saying, well, this is going to work, and then you may feel like it's not going to work, or you may feel like it's going to work, and then they say it ain't, and it's like you said, it's a lot. So everybody has to figure out what the mood is of the moment and what that song is, as they say that's going to be the hit. It's the hook, you know, it's the thing that's going to really catch the audience. This is how videos, budgets are approved for videos. This is how, when an artist is in a writing session, in a cutting session, how some songs make albums and some don't. It's about, do they fit the overall theme of what the record is. When you look at it from the independent scale, and from the last time we talked, it's great to see you, you know, making those moves and doing it. Is being on a major something that you're open to, or is it something you enjoy, the freedom, you know, the autonomy, the independence of being, you know, an independent artist?
Ultimately, I would like to make it work just independently. I'm not totally opposed to, I'm not like, nah, I don't want to be on a label at all. It would just kind of depend on what the situation was, what the deal was, what it's looking like ground level. But ultimately, if I had my way in a perfect world, I would definitely make it work, you know, just independently, because like you said, there's a lot of ownership there. You can make the call on what you want the creative vision to be, what you want the marketing vision to be, what you want, you know, you can make the call. And at the same time, it is all on you. It's going back to the football analogy. I used to say you're the quarterback, but really you're the head coach. You know what I mean? Mm. You might have people that work with you that they looking at you. You got the vision. This is your baby. This is your album, for example. You know what I mean? You know how you want it to sound. You know what direction you want to go in. So even though you got people that are making the beats or you got people that are doing the graphic design, you know, they're still looking to you like, okay, you want me to do the cover art. I'm willing to do the cover art. You done paid me to do the cover art, whatever the case may be. But what do you want on this cover art? What do you want? What's the title going to be? Do you have a picture that you want to use? That kind of thing. And that's all things that you can control versus, you know, you go in the studio, you record a track. 10 weeks later, they send you the fully packaged album with the cover art and everything. And all you really did was show up, take a picture, and you ain't hear nothing else about it until it's coming out. You know, like, but even then, depending on the situation. It just depends on the situation. You know what I mean? Because a lot of the times the label puts behind you resources that you may not have had previously. I mean, it's just, it's the nature of the industry, man. It could be real complicated. You know what I mean? You got cats like NBA Youngboy and Meek Mill. They coming on Twitter and they ain't made a dime off of their biggest singles and shit. It can get real complicated, so it really just depends on the situation and you know what it looked like on the ground level.
Yeah, I mean, we look at what Meg Thee Stallion is going through with her label, you know what I'm saying, and all that stuff, it's for y'all long time listeners off the cuff radio, you know, King, myself, you know, any of our guests we have on the show, we don't take shots at people. Anything that's out there in the news, we speak on respectfully and to the best of our knowledge of what we have with the information that has been disseminated. But just, you know, from the short side of it, we know Megan has had issues with her label. Like you said, Pat, you know, NBA Youngboy, you know, Meek Mill, you know what I mean? Even with, you know, he was talking about a few months ago about when my album comes out. I don't know. You know.
Yeah.
Right. Too many albums.
You know, and it's just a lot that goes on because people, we have said this on the show so many times, we will say it again. You need to know it's not enough to be on a label. And we understand with the culmination of what goes into it, as you said, fast, there are resources that being an independent artist doesn't always necessarily provide that a major can. And this is where, as we say, the fuckery happens. Because a lot of times, the artist that will sign just with anybody on anything just so they can get on. And then they get into situations where keeping, you know, to make it short, the business of it. You get hosed by the business. And if you are not savvy, if you do not know what is going on, you know, it's we're not going to name. Exactly. We're not going to name this artist because me and King have talked about it off the air enough that there's an artist who's not put out a record in some years. But his label is under another artist's label. And that's why he can't put any records out because that artist has not said that he can work technically. So that's why this artist cannot put out any album because of it.
And I try, you see this stuff a lot, but I think looking deeper into it, like, let's keep it real. The music industry is pretty predatory. You know what I mean? Like, not only the cats that they choose to go for, but also the way that they do it. You know what I mean? You're going for a cat that they got their own buzz, especially this day and age. They got their own buzz popping. They got their own movement going on. But at the same time, they not necessarily a CEO or a guru. You know what I mean? They just make dope music that people flock to. And then at the same time, they ain't had nothing. You ain't come from nothing. You live in the hood. Hell, maybe mm-hmm. you an artist like me. You trying to get the video shot and, you know, hit the shows in New York and just trying to make it happen. And then suddenly somebody come along and they like, look, I got, you know, 300K right now if you can, you know. And like you said, if you're not the type of artist to where you even got a base knowledge that it can be predatory, then you don't know what you're looking for. And next thing you know, you done signed some paperwork because all you know is you heard 300K and you can get your mama out the hood and you ain't got to go back to work at Burger King. So, you know, it's like the artists don't know what it entails a lot of the time, but the business does, and they still go forward with the way they do things. And that's why I'm like, it's kind of predatory.
Well, anything where there's talent, anything where there was talent, inherently, there's going to be predators because there are people that might not mm-hmm. necessarily have the talent that you have, but they are savages in terms of they're going to prey on it in the aspect of how they're going to get fed, you know. And we've seen this game over the years. It is littered with the carcasses of dead careers. It is the Siberia of people that have been frozen in contract limbo. You know, I mean, you know, you got people that literally have been starved out because they couldn't do anything once situations got into a very, very, very bad place. You know, we can only speak on this show because we know about the situation of contracts that were not always the best. Look at what happened with the Locks with Puffy. And we can only speak on that because that's documented how much they had problems with each other. You know what I'm saying? You know, we look at what happened with NWA, you know, with why Ice Cube left, because Ice Cube said that basically they weren't, you know, they were not getting paid what they should have. And Cube never signed a contract with the group. So that's why Cube was able to leave the way he did, because he was contractually not obligated. Which years later was like, man, you think about it, like, whoa, you know, I mean, he just was able to walk. You know, you look at a lot of artists, you know, in general, where, you know, you look at what happened with TLC with Pebbles. You know, who can forget that classic Behind the Music episode where, you know, right. left that, you know, Rest in Peace was talking about this is how you sell 3 million albums and you're so broke. And I think there was a crazy line. I think one of them said, I think Left Eye said it, we were millionaires for 5 minutes. And then we had nothing.
And as an artist, that's my standpoint as an artist. Like I say all the time, I would rather keep my pennies than owe millions. You know what I mean? And for a lot of it, it comes down to ownership. Like I would rather... You know, I'd rather do it on, it's harder. It's a lot more of a struggle, you know, to come up with the vision on your own and then make sure it happens and really quarterback every single play. It definitely becomes a challenge. But at the same time, you don't have to worry about that. You know what I mean? Whether I go out and I make $5 or I go out and something blow up and I make $5 million, it's on me, and then I can decide who, what, when, where, why, and how. And so, you know, you see a lot of artists, like y'all were saying, you see a lot of artists, they got the bread. First of all, a lot of artists don't understand that stuff like an advance or whatever, you know, that's not just, they're not just giving you a signing bonus. You know what that's I mean? Right. That's investment. That's the startup money. So, you know, that's the, but even then, like I said, you know, you, even if you know that that's the startup money, it's real easy to, like, we human. And when you come from a certain demographic, and you got 300K in your face, even if you're trying to be fastidious, even if you're trying to be frugal with it, you know, I'm going to put some up so I make sure I pay them back. You'd be a liar if you said you ain't going to go get at least one brand new pair of something brand. You might not get a Lambo off the lot and all, but you're going to do a little bit of splurging. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, I know that, all right, there's two sides to the coin for me. You know what I mean? There's a label, and like we said, they can be predatory. But also at the same time, as an artist, it is your responsibility to know what you're getting into and be able to say yes or no. So it's two ways. It's a two-way street. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, artists, I think everybody's just trying to protect themselves. You know, the business is trying to make sure they're not getting jerked out of money. The artist trying to make sure they're not getting jerked out of their image or their publishing. Or so it kind of looks like a dance or a chess game of trying not to get screwed over. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's, when you're looking at elements of the business, it's also something two people really have to understand about, like you said, about saving. Yo Gotti, when he got in his situation with TVT some years ago, you know, there was a little dispute that they had. Nothing too bad, but he just wanted out of his contract. And, you know, and Gotti, now, mind you, this is when Gotti, this is before Gotti, like, becomes the God, Yo Gotti that we know today. This is before Roc Nation, like, Puma endorsement, Yo Gotti. This is Gotti still kind of, you know, finding his way through the game. So Gotti, you know, they have a sit down, so they agree on a number. Gotti buys his contract back for $250,000. Now,
yeah.
You know, however he, you know, and we all know how Gotti was moving, so let's keep it brick. We know how, and he was all net with how he handled that. You know, because like you said, that, you know, that's why you have to have, you know, how, no matter how you get that green, make sure you got that guap, so if there's some fuckery, you can make it stop, you know. And
the ownership, man.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, how many artists can say that they got $250,000 cash money, that if they got a situation going on, you know, that they can buy their contract out like that? They can just write a check and be like, here, I want my contract.
And then with a lot, I also don't think about if the contract was worth $250,000, like, up front. Imagine how much money they would have made back in if he hadn't bought out. You know what I mean? So, and honestly, a lot of that, the back end, a lot of that I'm finding is where, you know, a lot of the differences come in, and really a lot of the money and everything come in. Like, a lot of people focus on the first week sales. You know what I mean? Oh, such and such sold, you know, $1 million in the first week. But the reality is, you know, artists like even like Michael Jackson and Prince, they still selling records to this day. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, they might have sold a million records that first week, but here it is 50 years after whatever, whatever, and they still can sell 1,000 albums, you know, every day type, you know, and they not even putting music out no more. So that's kind of what people kind of forget about. Like, it's like longevity took a back seat. You want to pop off now. You want to get the microwave fame. You want to go viral and be an influencer. And then, you know, three summers from now, niggas don't even remember the name of the song that was your claim to fame. But it's like, you forget, like, the longevity. It's always going to be Billie Jean. You know what I mean? It's always going to be Purple Rain. You know what I mean? Like, it's always going to be, hell, it's always going to, for Jay-Z, it's always going to be a hard knock life. Or, yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people forgot, like, that's really the goal. That's really, like, Nas, when he put his daughter as the
executive producer.
To receive royalty. Oh. Yeah, the executive producer.
Yeah, also, yeah,
that's
on,
what you think. That's what you really in it for. That's what you really in it for. Like, and, yeah, he might have did okay then at the time. But now, even after he gone, she's still going to be straight off of that album. You know what I mean? Like, and that'd be the stuff people forget about. It's like, it ain't about 10,000 views on YouTube, man. They'll forget your ass tomorrow, bro. You got to be more to it than that.
And you know what? I think what happened, too. I'm going to tell y'all what I think happened. I think what happened is a lot of the labels, they got spoiled by the 90s when SoundScan came out. And then they start seeing those million sales in the first week. Because, you know, if they do 2-3 million the first week, there's no leg room for the labels to really work now. So they like, okay, the mission is complete. The goal is platinum. So it's like, we ain't got to do no leg work. Eminem did 1.4 first day. We ain't got to work no more.
Yeah.
So what they try to do now is they try to emulate that formula on everybody that they sign afterward. Like, okay, we're going to sign you. We want some of that flair that Marshall has, so you got to make music like him. And that sabotages a lot of the artists.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Fact. And King made a great point, because I think when people lament the state of hip-hop right now, I can't take credit for this comment, but it resonated so much with me. I was reading about Benny. I was looking on one of Benny's videos, and somebody wrote a comment, and they were talking about why hip-hop is, why, you know, just what it's, and not that it wasn't Benny's video. It was a video, but it was one of those YouTubers who would do videos, and it was him and his wife, a black guy and his wife. They were talking about how they're not fans of hip-hop, and somebody wrote a comment in it about how the music has changed to where a lot of the older listeners, they just don't feel connected to it because the music has kind of lost its feel and its soul. So it's not really, like King said, you know, these labels are just treating it like a package process plant where they're just putting out whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's not really about quality more than it is quantity and how much we can put out of it. You know, when we think about that Snap Rap era with the franchise boards, you know, Shop Boys, you know, all those artists, you know, Crime Mob and all of them, and this is no shade to them, but that was going back like over 15 years ago. You know, and it's like you haven't heard from them in years. You know, they had a great hit for the time in terms of what the musical aesthetic was, in terms of it was popular, but it didn't go any further than that. As opposed to when you got guys like E-40, shout out to the Oakland, you know, Vallejo, the whole Bay town, and you got E-40's been doing this shit for over 30 years, still putting out albums at a high clip of quality and legendary. And, you know, even if people outside the Bay don't necessarily recognize his legendary, of course, King, myself, and you do, but mm-hmm. he's got classics out there that if a DJ plays it, everybody's going to go nuts about it because they're going to be like, yo, this is like he still moves units out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's mm-hmm. important when you come in the game that you're thinking not only from the business aspect of it, because that's a given, because you want to maintain business to make sure you stay in business, but you want to maintain your product so people know that when they buy something from you, they're getting something good.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Steve Stoller, the Mix King, you know, work with Mobb Deep, you know, basically damn near all the QB. Shout out the Italian Stallion Steve, and we had him on a couple of years ago. King and me, we always talk about that show about what Steve was. Yeah, you remember what he talked about, how the budgets was going on around back in the day in terms of videos and recorded budgets and all that? Remember that? You know, so, yeah, and Steve was just telling us about how the, you know, how they were putting a lot of money behind these artists back in the 90s and early 2000s, but that's what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the Wild West. I mean, hip-hop at that apex during that time, you think about Nas and Jay-Z with Stillmatic, you know, in the Blueprint album. I mean, you look at what Nelly was doing in the early 2000s. I mean, later on, you know, you look at what Ja Rule did, you know, 50 came later on, you know. I mean, that was a beautiful time in music, hip-hop and R&B. Usher, you know, Luda, Lil Jon and all them. I mean, it was just, It was just different. And I mean,
beautiful, right?
Yeah, I mean, Cash Money, you know, was still, you know, well, Wayne was beginning to make his ascent. You know, Juvenile had already left by then, but Cash Money was still kind of moving. It was just wild, man, just to see how, and this is way before Gucci Mane, Jeezy, you know, and everybody else starts coming in. You know, T.I. was already moving back then. It was just different. But that money was around there back then where, and this is, and there's one key thing. which is pretty much all before social media as we know it today. So,
and honestly, social media was definitely the looking glass that we went through, you know, that changed the game, because it was like now, like the whole label formula from the 90s, she just turned upside down now. You know, it's not so much
absolutely.
It's not so much gatekeeping.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like regular people can do. There's a lot more accessibility. Like, of course, there's still some gatekeepers and still some, you know, influencers and personalities and all that good stuff. But there's a lot more access. I mean, hell, when I first started shooting a music video, you know, that's, you got to be a superstar to be shooting a music video. You ain't just know somebody that you can hit up and, you know, pay them and make it happen and da-da-da-da-da. Like now, you know, it's videographers around and you can get quality graphic design. Man, I remember making my own graphic designs when I was in fucking high school and trying to, you know. But honestly, that's where I learned a lot of the stuff. That's where I learned
right.
a lot of the stuff when I couldn't,
yeah.
it wasn't available.
Think about how fast technology developed over a span of like roughly 5-6 years, though, dog. I mean, when we look at camera phone technology
yeah.
as we know came around 2005. That's when it really began to, pick up a little bit, because I remember getting my first camera phone in 2006. So this is around late 2005 when camera phones would begin to come in. Now, we still haven't gotten to the place of where you're getting to actually videos being recorded with camera phones yet. That wouldn't come for maybe another 4 or 5 years. Digital cameras were coming along a couple of years later. So you were kind of seeing that transition from where back in the day, if you were going to shoot a video, it was a big damn deal. I mean.
Oh, yeah. And
you know,
I mean, like even now, something like Zoom would have been, you know, virtually unheard of 20 years ago. You know what I mean? Like.
Right.
You just now coming out, 2002? Yeah, you just now, you know, a lot of people still didn't even have a cell phone at all back then.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at them old YouTube videos when them people used to shoot their videos from that 2007 era, and they look all grainy.
Even
look at Soulja Boy's first video, how choppy it was.
Yeah.
They were top of the line at the time, though.
Oh, yeah.
You
was the man. I feel like you was the man when you had a video out.
No, that 480, 360 resolution was crazy back then. Now you got 4K and 5K. It's like,
it's exponential.
Exactly. The increase has been crazy in terms of how inordinate it was. It just, like, one thing about it, people have to understand, technology moves fast, so you have to stay on top of it. Now we're looking at the aspect of the NFTs and the Bitcoin and all that and how everything is moving and the cryptocurrency. So there's always elements of it that we're going to see things, not only in the culture, but in society at large change. And I think, for being pragmatic, for understanding that, you always need to be as educated as possible of what's going on, because you never know what knowledge you have is going to help you as you apply it to your personal life, in any capacity, whether currency or creativity, or a little bit of both. Because currency is your creativity, and creativity is your currency. It's interchangeable. As you pretty much, you know, keep going fast from aspects of it, where do you see hip-hop culture going in terms of the music? Some people say we're getting back to kind of that, you know, real hardcore, that real sincere, soulful feel. Where do you see it going in the next couple of years?
I definitely see the rise of the independent. I definitely, and I think that will perpetuate, like you were saying, that soulful You know, people are going to want to hear more real music. You're going to want to hear more subject matter. You notice now a lot of the songs that come out that become the most popular nowadays are starting to be more of the songs that, you know, really have something that's relatable to the common man. You know, it might be, you know, you might be talking about the struggle, or you might be talking about, you might be talking about how you came up and got rich, but now how everybody around you done switched up and blah, you know, but it's something that real people can flop to and be like, okay, I can, you know, get that. And that's really like Toba and Fat. You know what I mean? I don't know if y'all heard them, but they coming out and they, you know, I never know how to pronounce their last name. I'll be feeling like I'm just butchery. But they come out and they have a message in the rhymes, and it's still, you know, got that still. You could probably play some of their joints in the club and still get them rocking. But at the same time, they talking about like black excellence. They talking about the black family. They talking about, you know, black independence, stuff like that. That can really resonate with people. And they doing a lot of their own thing, like independently and everything. So I really think we're going to get more into more independent artists, but also more independent labels. And even a lot of the independent labels now still are kind of under the umbrella of the bigger one, you know, Warner Brothers or Universal or something like that. But I think we're going to start getting more pure independence, where it's like you're going to catch the labels, kind of like Merge was in Durham, where you got your niche market, and that's what you're going to work with, and you're going to do it independently without one of the major. I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of that from both artists and labels, more so than what the previous formula was. And then I also feel like a lot more of the power is going to start going into the artist's hands specifically. I just see that there's a little bit of a shift starting. We're starting to see a little bit of a shift where people are starting to recognize the importance of artists and the arts. You know what I mean? Whereas artists may have been, you know, lower on the totem pole previously, where it's like, yeah, you create the work, but, you know, we make you famous and we get you in the magazine. So, you know, I think it's starting to, you're starting to see where they're realizing, yo, there's not, it's the music business, but you don't have the music business without the music. Otherwise, it's just the business. And I think people are starting to kind of realize that.
Mm-hmm. Facts.
Definitely.
Facts, mm-hmm. Man. So, you know, you got things to take care of, man. We about to wrap this thing up shortly, man. It's always a pleasure to build with you. I know you're going to chill tomorrow night, representing North Carolina. And we also got to say, I don't know if you all, if we talked about this last time, you were Tar Heel head, but we put the beats to Duke, man.
yeah, that last game.
We put
North
a foot
State
in their neck.
Last game in the series. And then we beat them. We still
sent Krzyzewski to the retirement home with an ass whooping. So that made me smile.
Look,
I do got to shout out Coach K though. He legendary. You know what I mean?
Definitely. You know, that's for the sport, but I'm talking as a competitive nature of the culture. Send him home with an ass whipping.
We're gonna refrain from talking trash tonight because, you know, for our West Coast fans, because because UCLA plays North Carolina, so we're just gonna say go Heels, but we're not gonna, you know. And I respect UCLA, great athletic tradition in terms of college athletics. They have the most championships of all the schools.
They ain't hanging with us, T-Max. Look at that political.
Nah.
Look at that politically correct talk, man. They ain't been nice as the Van O'Bannon brothers, nigga. We UNC out here. I'm talking tonight.
Yeah, so we hoping to get that Final Four ticket tonight. So
we gonna take it all, baby.
I'm looking for us to take it all. Gonzaga went out. They were the overall number one. Was it like 2-3 number ones went out over the past week? So it's like, yeah, we moving.
Yeah, they ain't been moving since the O'Bannon brothers, bro. It's a new day, it's a new era, man. So UNC, we going to take over, man. It's what it is.
Yeah. Game time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, on that note, we out of here, man. Thank you again, brother, for joining us, man. You're definitely welcome to come aboard in the future. And let people know where they can find you on social media, too, before we go.
Oh, yeah, no doubt, no doubt. I try to make everything easy. You can find me on Instagram, I'm the Fat Boy. Twitter, I'm the Fat Boy. But you can really find everything at imthefatboy.com. Oh, yeah, and definitely tune in. Jam online concert, March 30th. That's Wednesday coming up. Tickets available. It's an online concert, but we also pulling up in High Point, North Carolina. So y'all come through to the show, man. It's going to be lit. I mean, this is going. That's all I can say. It's going to be fly. So imthefatboy.com/jam. imthefatboy.com where you can find everything. Check me out. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, man, on that note, we out of here, man. Catch us next week. Same time, same bat channel. Holla.
Yeah.